right, welcome back. It's the COVID Chronicles Hour, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday here on this network and this program. For you, wherever you are around the world, we hope you share these programs. We hope you listen to them twice, in fact, because there's usually a lot of information that we are trying to bring forward in a logical, pragmatic fashion that will enable you to make better decisions as we walk together through this deadly minefield of biological insanity. How was that?
Excellent.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Don't get up. Just sit down. It's all right. Don't have to stand up.
Well, I had to process it first.
Yes. Well, speaking of processing, I'm sure most all of you know, and I did play this the other day on the program and put it on the site as well, Klaus Schwab's little boy advisor. He's about 5'2". Nothing wrong with 5'2". It's fine. But Yuval Noah Harari only says things that obviously are approved, and actually, I don't even think he gives a damn. He's just telling it like it is. So he made a statement the other day, which I found to be very interesting. Can AI be controlled? Was kind of the hook that he hung the title on, and it's interesting. It's a very short piece. I'm going to play this just for, I guess, dynamics. All right, here we go. This is Yuval telling us where we are and where he thinks we're going. Now, this is pretty interesting. Well, hold on. All I got to do is restart it. And there we go.
It's the end of human history. The end of human-dominated history. History will continue with somebody else in control. In 5 years, there'll be a technology that can make decisions independently and that can create new ideas independently. Maybe they'll be nice. Maybe they'll solve cancer and climate change, but we are not sure. I'm tending to think of it more in terms of really an alien invasion, an alien fleet of spaceships coming from planet Zircon or whatever, with highly intelligent beings. This is what we are facing, except that the aliens are not coming in spaceships from planet Zircon, they're coming from the laboratory. If the humans are divided among themselves and are in an arms race, then it becomes almost impossible to contain this alien intelligence.
All right, now, he said several things there, which are very interesting. Remember, he's on the inside edge of the inside edge. So he's not just running his mouth. These are things that he's very familiar with. And he starts out by saying, this is the end of human history. Those are pretty big words. So let's just have fun here and listen to that again.
The end of human history. The end of human-dominated history. History will continue with somebody else in control.
And who might that somebody else be? What group might that be? Huh?
5 years, there'll be a technology that can make decisions independently and that can create new ideas independently.
We already have that now, don't we? A new intelligence. Hold on.
They'll be nice. Maybe they'll solve cancer and climate change, but we are not sure. I'm tending to think of it more in terms of really an alien invasion, an alien fleet of spaceships coming from planet Zircon or whatever with highly intelligent beings. This is what we are facing, except that the aliens are not coming in spaceships from planet Zircon, they're coming from the laboratory. If the humans are divided among themselves and are in an arms race, then it becomes almost impossible to contain this alien intelligence.
And yes, humans will be divided. Count on it. That's the plan. Now, alien intelligence, that's interesting. He didn't say they were coming from the planet Zircon. He was just being a little mirthful. He said that alien intelligence will come from a lab. Well, A lab can be advanced computer technology lab, can't it? And what do the letters on the two words alien intelligence stand for? AI. Get it? All right. Well, that alien intelligence is exploding as we speak. GPT-4, ChatGPT-4, has an equivalent human IQ of about 154. That's in Einstein's range. ChatGPT-5, which is due out within the next 8 to 12 weeks, according to several sources, will have a human IQ equivalent 10 times higher than 154. You do the math and it turns out to be over 1,500. So an IQ of over 1,500 already, and they've just let this stuff out. Now we know they're way down the road in those labs creating even more powerful realms of AI. But what they're going to let everyone have access to is basically an intelligence with an IQ of 1,500. Think about that. And then think about the safeguards that they're allegedly building into it. The next iteration, GPT-6, will probably have enough IQ power if it's up by another factor of 10. That'll be 15,000 or more. It'll be able to reprogram itself while its handlers are asleep, and it'll be off to the races. It's going to be quite a goat rodeo, as they say. What do you think, partner?
Yes, the thought of it is really very foreboding.
It's kind of scary, too, isn't it? That's a joke. All right, speak up. Your volume is a little low. Talk up a little bit.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah. Todd, can you give me a little more volume, please, on my little Lucy board here? It's way down. Okay. I think it is foreboding. And if you're not one to be concerned about this, then you've just thrown it all up and said, whatever, that's fine. You know, that may be one way to handle all this. It's because it's not good news. Everywhere you turn, it's not good news. That's very difficult on a mass psyche. And there are a lot of people now who are on medications. And understandably, I get it. Suicide rates are up. It's not looking good. Now, anything you want to add to that? Being the Yuval Harari fan that you are?
No, I don't like where this is going. I don't think it's necessary. I think for every problem they claim to solve, they create five more.
Right, right. I like when you say it's not necessary. I couldn't agree more. It could have gone on the way it was. They could have refined things. They could have begun to make gradual, incremental changes that would have made this a better, cleaner planet. They could have rediscovered education and insisted upon standards being met, not 13 high schools in Baltimore where not one student is proficient in math, not one, and 50 high schools in, I think it was Minnesota, it was Minneapolis, 50, where not one student is doing their grade math equal. They're behind 2 or 3 years minimum. They don't care. Most big cities now, 75% drop out before they graduate. So anyhow, the point is, this didn't have to happen. It was unnecessary. I concur. All right, now there's an interesting little montage. You can't see it. I'll post it later. And it's kind of an assemblage of clips from a principal movie called Utopia and several other audio clips from various news stories and so forth. It's pretty good. What was the film Utopia about? I don't know.
Basically what we're living through now.
Oh, okay.
Somebody unleashes a virus that, creates a demand for a vaccine, and the vaccine is really to kill and sterilize people. I haven't watched the movie, but that, you know, I've seen the trailer and clips, but...
I'm trying to get this to play. It doesn't want to play now. What's wrong here? All right. Well, let me reload it, and maybe that'll work. All right. Hold on.
The funny thing about this clip, well, funny depending on your perspective, is with all the commotion that Professor Philip Buchholz didn't want. He's getting it in spades now.
He backtracked on. Oh, he wanted to.
Well,
hide.
he's featured twice in this little clip. So if he thought he was going to retreat into obscurity and resume life as he knew it, right. Too late for that.
Okay, here it is. This is 5 minutes, and there's the utopia. Maybe I should just, should I just say utopia when the utopia clips play in this montage?
Sure. Yeah.
All right, I'll just say that. Utopia. Okay. Here we go.
You used me. You used my flu.
Utopia.
You desecrated all of my work. You disrespected science. Mm-hmm. What the hell did you put in that vaccine?
The Pfizer vaccine is contaminated with plasmid DNA.
Hey, this is Buchholz.
It's not just mRNA. It's got bits of DNA in it.
We created a flu that sparked the demand for a vaccine that doesn't work.
Utopia.
After everyone in the country is vaccinated.
And the world.
Normalcy only returns
Gates.
When we've largely vaccinated the entire global population.
Utopia.
How much evil do you have to do? Do good.
This DNA can and likely will integrate into the genomic DNA of cells that got transfected with the vaccine mix.
Utopia.
I knew it.
You created a panic and now everybody's begging for the vaccine.
No. Demanding it with all the entitlement of a first world country.
A majority of Americans expect a vaccine to be available within 2 months. And 65% of those polled are eager to take the vaccine, even if it's experimental.
Yes.
Utopia.
And now we have exactly what we want. Hundreds of millions of Americans lining up, offering us their arms, and letting us give them our creation.
I'm pretty sure when every vaccinated person starts dying, they'll trace it back to undetectable virus or not.
Tell me this. What have you done today to earn your place in this crowded world? Exactly. Everything I do is a cure for our current situation. We intend to stop human reproduction for 3 generations.
So remember that medicine that many people...
Hi, this is Gonzalo Lira, who is currently in a Ukraine prison.
...supposed to take, were obliged to take, mandated to take, or else they'd lose their jobs. You know the medicine I'm talking about. Something horrifying is happening. More people are dying, and fewer children are being born.
Utopia.
The endless global assembly line of babies will grind to a halt.
You're sterilizing people?
Uh-huh. In the first 5 years, we'll start to see major birth rate declines as teenagers vaccinated stay at their childbearing years.
Australia's fertility rate is near historic lows and falling fast. The number of babies per woman is generally 2.1 just for a stable population, but Australia is currently 1.7, similar in most developed nations, and in South Korea, a mere 0.8. Globally, it's 2.3, falling from 5.3 in 1963.
You're controlling the future.
Utopia.
Is that what they're calling it? It's a very nice euphemism for a species that is replicated like a contagion across the planet, killing all other species in its wake.
You hate people that much?
On the contrary, I love people.
How?
Why would doing what our government or citizenry is too spoiled or self-indulgent to do? We are saving ourselves from ourselves.
Halting overpopulation.
Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job
Gates.
On new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services. We could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
100 years ago, the global population was 1.7 billion. 2011, it reached
7 billion.
Here we can see a chart that looks at the total world population over the last several hundred years. And at first glance, this is a bit scary.
People live too long, die less often, fuck too much, shit out babies like...
In 2050, they say it's going to plateau.
Mm-mm-mm. We'll blow past 11 billion and then slowly begin to decline.
But by then, it'll be too late to save an Earth that bears any resemblance to a world we actually want to live in. I love this planet, so I decided to take care of the problem. Global warming, mass extinctions, food, water shortages. All these problems can be boiled down to one thing: overpopulation.
What do you see as the biggest challenges in conservation?
Yeah, the growing human population.
Prince Philip.
1.7 billion, we can be as decadent, self-indulgent, shitty as we want. At 10 billion, we have to live strategically. We have to live modestly. We have to live selflessly. And as you know, we're not that good at it. If we don't do something now, right now, in a decade, our world will experience extraordinary privations. A war of all against all.
Water. We'll go to war over water, and the people who will die first are the ones without power and money.
The negative impact of population growth on all of our planetary ecosystems,
David Rockefeller,
is becoming appallingly evident.
You can't just decide people won't have babies because...
I can, and I did. Think of me as the stern parent who tells the children they can't play with the family gun.
How about what this does to people, society?
Salvation. We can form a new society.
Home.
Mm-hmm. The grand social experiment. Do you want to know what happens next?
You used me.
Yeah.
You used my flu.
There you go. You want to know what happens next? I think we can all pretty well fill in those blanks.
Mm.
So this is a 2020 film, I think you told me, 2020?
Yeah, that came out in 2020.
So that's right on the very edge of this whole nightmare that has been unleashed upon humankind. And one of the primary messages there was certainly sterilization. And we know that is... one of the absolute keys of how this bioweapon is working. And some time ago, Erica called this bioweapon, it's oncological. It's a cancer shot, is what it is. And we've been covering the turbo cancer aspect of this very completely, as much as we can. And it is really beginning to pan out now. It's almost if the clots didn't get you, and the other issues that are common, that are often fatal, you're going to get cancer as the final act.
Yeah. And, you know, even just having thick blood predisposes
somebody
to developing
that's
cancer.
That's really important. Good. Tell everyone why they... We haven't talked about thick blood in a while, but that's really important. Go ahead.
Well, the blood is thick because of the inflammation and all of these components in the blood, these... what we call acute phase reactants. We have things like serum amyloid, antibodies, fibrin. There's probably 13 different
components,
what we call acute phase reactants, that just clog the bloodstream when there's inflammation. And in this case, because this spike protein all by itself has these sequences in it that cause proteins that it comes into contact with to misfold, and then they lose their three-dimensional structure, and they form a beta sheet and begin to aggregate, and they form these amyloid fibrils that just get bigger and bigger and bigger. But in the beginning, this microclotting is occurring only in the capillaries, which is why it doesn't show up on a scan. You might get lucky and be able to detect it with a D-dimer, although not necessarily, because D-dimer is the breakdown of fibrin. But in some cases, the fibrin that's in these clots is all tied up, so it's not breaking down. So there's nothing to measure in the blood. So having thick blood like this starves the tissues of oxygen, and that puts tremendous pressure on them. They're not able to generate energy like a healthy cell would, and they revert to becoming primitive cells like fermenters, and that just dramatically increases the probability that they will become cancerous. And this is happening on a system-wide level, which might explain why when people do get diagnosed, the cancer is literally everywhere, and they cannot find a primary tumor.
That was a real surprising one to read the other day, that they couldn't focus on the origin of it. It was everywhere. It was like a shotgun. Boom. The blood gets thick. The blood actually turns dark. You've seen pictures. We presented many pictures, video, stills. It's a very dark blue-black, obviously lacking most, if not virtually all, of the oxygen potential that should be in blood. Well, this thickened blood, when it's drawn by a nurse, for example, or a lab tech, often clots before it even gets out fully of the human body and into the receiving tube. It's clotted. By the time it gets down to the lab in a hospital, it's useless. They can't spin it. It's that thick. So your heart was not designed to push sludge. It was designed to push liquid. And this is taking a terrible toll on the human heart. And that's why we have so many heart attacks. The heart is just giving up. Your life is vastly shortened because your heart longevity has now been clipped up terribly. It's way shorter than it would have been. It's just going to quit.
One of the complaints these people have, a lot of people have, you know, the shedding victims as well as the vaxxed, is fatigue. And the fatigue can be as simple as this microclotting that's happening. Because without oxygen, it's, you know, your heart is trying to push around this very thick blood.
Can't.
That in and of itself is tiring.
Where's the valves out first? They can't do it.
Yes.
It's real bad. This is not an experimental anything. It's not a failed anything. This is a brilliantly successful biological, military, geopolitical military weapon that is achieving exactly what it was supposed to do across the board. We've spelled this out for 2.5 years now, how diverse the number of ways that this shot can kill. It's just astonishing. All right, here's a woman, I don't know how she is, 60 maybe, 65, and she was just fine. What do you hear this story? Hold on.
My name is Kelly Sue, and I am what I would call a survivor of the vaccine. I used to walk 10 miles a day. I used to ride my bike 24 miles every second day. I also worked out at the gym, and I work 72 hours a week, and I'm very social, and I'm a type A. I started a charity in 2016 where we feed 800 children every weekend and on holidays, and I have staff, and I have 750 volunteers, and we believe that the vaccine was the right thing to do. I had my first shot, and within a very, very short time, I developed cramping in my calf. It got progressively worse, so I went to my massage therapist. When I told her what was happening, she threw up her hands and said, "I can't touch you. You have to go to a doctor. Sounds like you have a blood clot." So I booked myself in to a vascular surgeon, and they did an ultrasound on my legs, and then I went home. 3 weeks later or so, I still hadn't heard from the vascular surgeon and thought, okay, well, if I haven't heard anything, it's fine. I had my second shot on June the 12th. 3.5 weeks later, I had back-to-back strokes, and they just kept getting progressively worse. So throughout July into August, into September, into October, and in early November, I had 9 TIAs and strokes. I spent 31 days in the hospital. I had everything from blindness in my eyes because of the occipital strokes. I had inability to use my mouth. I couldn't talk for a long time. And I also had a terrible experience, and why this little piece of paper in my lap is so important to me because I woke up in the morning and didn't know who I was, didn't know where I was, didn't know anything. I have terror now. When I close my eyes, I don't know, one, if I'm going to wake up, or two, if I'm going to wake up and not know who I am. When I first went to the neurologist that I was assigned, he was very clear that it was the vaccine. He said, we're seeing so much of this. And then when doctors started getting fired, let go, there was no discussion about the vaccine anymore. Nobody would discuss the vaccine anymore. I think the thing that bothers me the worst is no one's looking as to why this is happening. My life is not the same at all, not even close to what it was before. A week ago Friday, all of a sudden out of the blue, my blood pressure went to 247 over 60. 247 over 60. Like, who has a blood pressure like that? So I'm fighting for my life right now. And that's all I can do.
There you go. That was obviously a year ago. And we have no idea. I don't even have a good grasp on how many people around the world are sick and dying like this. You heard this woman lay out a litany of things that could have killed her. Several of them. This is common. And when someone dies in a hospital or at home, and somebody has to fill out a cause of death on a death certificate, they'll put anything down there rather than the injections. They will not write COVID bioweapon injection or anything of the sort. So the cover-up continues. And if you're looking to government statistics to try to prove or demonstrate anything in terms of vax injured, vax dead, forget it. Government is nothing but a lying machine now. They will not stand on truth. It's just not what governments do. Not anymore. But that's just one case. And I would say hundreds of billions of cases, not hundreds, millions in the several billion. There was a story last week, I mentioned it. 2+ billion have severe vax injuries now around the world. 2+ billion.
I believe that. I believe it.
So we got hundreds of millions.
As I said, I'm seeing
sick.
In my travels, I'm seeing more handicapped people, younger handicapped people, and you can only wonder, you know, is that fallout from one of the injections they took?
And elaborate on that just a bit. When you say handicapped, what are we talking about?
I'm seeing people who are having trouble getting around. They're walking strangely. There's something wrong with their gait. You know, maybe one leg is slightly limp, like maybe they had a stroke. Or their gait is just not coordinated, so maybe a neurological issue.
Right.
And then the other day I saw a, not an old woman, but older in the store having to use a cane to you know, a blind man's cane. She couldn't see. And again, you wonder, stroke, neurological issue. I mean, you know, she clearly had. I mean, you know, I haven't seen this much debility locally ever.
You mentioned vision. We don't talk very much about it, but we have these bioweapon injections do seem to affect and afflict the nerve in the eye? We're talking neurology here.
The eyes and the kidneys.
The optical nerve would be a target. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's where, you know, microcirculation is going to probably take its toll first. Mm-hmm. If the microcirculation is impaired, the blood vessels in the eye and then the blood vessels in the kidney. Not that damage isn't happening elsewhere, but those two organs really, really depend on having a good microcirculation to function normally.
This whole thing really revolves back to the same thesis. Don't mess with Mother Nature. When mankind first fully laid out the human genome, I thought to myself, and I'm no scientist, I said, this is going to open the door to the last days of Atlantis. They're going to start now mixing genetics, half animal, half human hybrids. Oh, they've done that. You can count on it. And all kinds of things. When you begin to play God with genetics, where do you stop? And that's another problem that is obviously on the table. We have another clip now here. Many new life forms are coming. Many new life forms are coming on this planet. And the guy's name, it's a short video, is Michael Levin. Michael Levin. It's always the same group. Always the same group. Another Catholic Irishman,
that?
Huh? Uh-huh. Remember the movie Jurassic Park? Is that private island with life forms that were created by science? Well, that's kind of a model of what this guy is describing that's headed our way. It's like the planet Earth, Jurassic Park. These people, this group, they don't care about any life but their own. They're going to dive into this genetic reengineering of life forms now, and they're telling us that's what they're going to do. There's an old axiom that if mankind, humankind, can do something, no matter how dangerous or bad it is, they're going to do it. And I can't think of one example where that hasn't been proven to be correct. The Goyim,
no, they can't resist.
They can't. The Goyim are being vastly reduced right now on the planet. Right now. Look at, just for fun, look at Ukraine. 400,000 white Christian men slaughtered, and women in the military.
Incredible.
It is truly incredible. Don't stop with the idea that the Goyim are being reduced on the planet, because the Zionist elite have big plans to repopulate their new Jurassic Park Earth with all sorts of new life forms, all built from genomic experiments and genetic manipulations in the lab to create unlimited new forms of life. Anything else you want to do by way of a setup on this? You found it. It's a good catch.
Well, yeah. So this Michael Levin is, you know, rising to prominence. He is a biologist, synthetic biologist, I would say, at Tufts University in Massachusetts. He has worked at the Forsyth Institute in California, which is known for its nanotechnology that was started by Eric Drexler. But he, you know, shamelessly explains where they're going with this as if it's a done deal, which is really a mind bender. We're at the point now where we can manipulate matter at the genetic level to redesign life as we know it. And so his claim to fame is he came up with a co-discoverer of something he calls xenobots, which is a prime example of synthetic biology. These were made from frog skin cells, but they manipulated them so that they can serve a purpose, and you can design it or program it to do whatever it is you want it to do, perform whatever function. And I think they were about, was it 10, the size of the xenobot was, let me see, 10, 1 millimeter. So it's pretty small. You could see it with a microscope. So it's not technically nano, but it is called a xenobot.
All right, here we go. Michael Levin. Now, this is a little bit heavy, but we'll post it later, and you'll be able to look at it at your leisure. All right, here we go. But listen to the larger impact of what he's laying out here. It's quite clear.
In this framework, we look at a continuum of agency. I don't like binary categories. I think they're completely artificial. I think these questions are empirical. They are not philosophical. We have to do the experiments and see which substrates have what capacities. We can define selves as a boundary of goals that the collective system is capable of pursuing, but it's on us as observers to recognize those goals in an optimal way. And we're not very good at it. We need a better science of doing it. Developmental bioelectricity, as the ancient precursor of what nervous systems do, is one kind of cognitive glue that binds competent subunits towards larger scale selves. And evolution, of course, interacts with this whole process, but in a bidirectional way. And so the last thing I want to point out is simply this, that when Darwin looked at the richness of variety in the biological world, he coined this phrase, endless forms most beautiful. All of the natural forms are here. They're a tiny little corner of the possible state space of every combination of evolved material, engineered material, and software. All of these things, hybrids and cyborgs and hybrids and chimeras of various kinds, many of these already exist and many more are going to exist because all of this is possible because life is so interoperable. And the reason it's so interoperable is that evolution makes problem-solving machines. All of these systems don't take their past experiences too seriously. They don't overtrain on their priors. They have to solve problems from scratch every single time. And thus novelty is not surprising to them. They're dealing with a very unreliable medium. They basically, the whole architecture assumes that things are going to be broken, things are not going to work the way you expect, and you have to solve problems from scratch. And for this reason, all of these things are viable. And that means that going forward in the next couple of decades, we are going to be surrounded by creatures that are nowhere on the tree of life with us. We cannot use the old familiar strategies of asking where on the tree of life is it? Is it more like a snake or a dog or a dolphin or these things are going to be nowhere on that scale. And the old categories of is it engineered versus natural? Is it a machine versus an organism? All of these crisp categories are going to become completely useless. I mean, they were never correct, but at least in the olden days, they were a rough heuristic that you could use. And so we're going to need to develop a new form of ethics for relating to minds that are not like ours, and that's really critical. So.
a new form of ethics, right?
Yeah, it's funny to hear ethics come out of that guy. Here's the deal. The idea is simple. Everything that we know now, the Earth as we know it, if these people have their way, it's all going to be changed. They're going to be animals and other sorts of things walking around either under some kind of control or perhaps let loose in the wild or all of the above. I don't know. But these people look at the incredible array and diversity of life on this planet as being such a tiny little corner of the potential that they're going to set to work and really liberate the possibilities that we're not able to see or enjoy now. Goodbye, planet Earth. They're going to redo the whole damn thing. Jurassic Park.
Well, and you have no idea what the consequences are going to be of unleashing
none.
Whatever your lab creation is, I think we're already seeing
there won't be any
some
studies.
Consequences already.
No.
But now it's no holds barred.
There it is. It's right there.
Free reign.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to our human files and see what we've got here. There's a lot going on. These are very important. These are our anecdotal stories, if you're new to the program, that we try to read each program for a few minutes at least. Sometimes we get behind. And these are real people with real questions and real damages. They have been very severely injured. All right. Where do we want to go first?
You pick, and then let me know what date.
Oh, you always do that to me. Let's see. All right, we have Toxic 1 through 8, 7, September 11th?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Toxic. Do you remember what that is?
Let me get it.
Toxic number 1.
Yep, this is B6. B6. Well, these are...
These are all B6?
Yeah, but I mean, these are people who believe that their problems are the result of having elevated levels of B6 in their blood. Since we're not allowed to talk about other causes of problems on Facebook, I would contend that a lot of these are the result of injury from the injections, and people are just looking for a diagnosis, an easy explanation for their problems, and B6 toxicity comes to mind because they really are not getting a lot of help from the medical establishment. They're handed the results of their blood tests, and in some cases, if B6, which is a vitamin, has been measured and it appears out of range, then they believe they've got their diagnosis and they're going to pursue whatever remedies they can. And you know, it's failing miserably because if there is elevated B6 on a blood test, it's likely the result of inflammation. Mm-hmm. But without addressing inflammation, this B6 problem is not going to be solved. And quite often, it can be deceptive because a high level of a nutrient in the blood sometimes means that it's not getting into the tissues where it's needed. And in the case of B6, you know, you're going to have a whole raft of problems that result from B6 deficiency if it's not getting to where it needs to go.
Okay. All right, let's see what this sounds like.
This first one is quite a saga.
Well, I'll read the first half. You take the second
half.
Okay. Hi, everyone. This morning, I had a turn. I'm just wondering if any of you also experienced this sort of thing. In case you haven't seen my initial post last week, I'll just briefly catch you up. Diagnosed last week, level was 7830.
Nanomoles.
I guess. 7830, with a reference range of 20 to 190. I was unknowingly taking 120.8 of B6 daily between two supplements. I stopped taking one of them last week, but continued the other in an attempt to taper off under somebody's advice. I stopped the second supplement 3 days ago. My blood and urine tests were all normal otherwise. 2 weeks ago, my MRIs came back normal as well. My main symptoms have been difficulty walking, fatigue, cramps, burning feet when trying to sleep, insomnia, night sweats, tremors in my hands, and on a few occasions, uncontrollable muscle spasms. I had a good day yesterday. Other than needing my hour of afternoon nap, I was able to get around well and felt like my old self for the most part. So this morning, I was struggling to get around again. I got a little more energy back after breakfast and managed to pack some things in a bag. My mom had taken me off to my parents' farm for a change of scenery, and we had to come back today.
She continues, I got down on the floor to pat and cuddle my dog, and it was so nice. Then suddenly something changed in my brain, and I had to fall to the side. And it was like my brain was woozy. My legs started spasming, and I was barely able to reply to Mom when she spoke to me. I felt frozen. She tried to get me to stand up, but I couldn't. Mom is in her 70s and doesn't have the strength to pick me up off the ground. My head just felt underwater. I eventually fought and got myself up onto a chair where Mom told me to put my shoes on while she loaded up all our stuff in the car. I could barely manage to tie my laces, like things were short-circuiting. I felt nauseous. I froze again after one shoe. A little later, I got the second shoe on. Then I sat myself up, and my arm was spasming. I couldn't focus. My mouth was open, and my head was lolled to the side. I noticed my vision was blurry in places. I felt shut down. My mouth was really dry. I was still alert, but not to full capacity. This time I felt closer to losing alertness than any other incident. Mom got me to use my walker and get outside. I struggled but managed to slump myself and move my legs just enough. My nausea got worse, and as I got close to the car, I started dry heaving a bunch. Nothing came up, and I made it into the car. I drank some water and slowly started to feel less nauseous. As I tried to talk, there were moments I struggled to get words out. I had freezing cold hands and feet, and Mom put on the heater so I could warm up. After about 20 to 30 minutes, I felt recovered in my brain. I checked my Fitbit and found I had a heart rate of 114 at 12:38, and then 2 minutes later, it had dropped to 89. I'm wondering if this is my blood pressure dropping and not enough blood reaching my brain. It's really scary to experience. I've attached a few video examples of previous symptoms. I'm hoping this is not outside of B6 toxicity, as I really don't need another illness going on.
All right, let's rewind here. There's a big B6 toxicity group online. I don't know how big it is, right?
Oh, I'm going to guess 3,000 to 4,000. And there's more than one
right.
group.
So, since when does B6 become a problem? I've honestly not heard about this before you brought this material up. And how is it that
B6 can
cause such a wide range of disabling breakdowns?
B6 is the one water-soluble vitamin that can become neurotoxic if you take too much of it over a long period of time. And then there's some people with certain genetic inborn errors of metabolism that are predisposed to having a problem with B6. But in the past, particularly people with conditions like pyroluria and even schizophrenia have been put on very, very high doses of B6 without issue. So the fact that we have seemingly so many people experiencing B6 toxicity nowadays is a real puzzle. Now, as I said a few minutes ago, it can occur as a result of inflammation, in which case the treatment would be to address the underlying cause of inflammation, which, you know, if it's somebody that's taken the vax, good luck with that.
Right.
In addition to stopping any supplements, I have heard and read from many sources that you cannot get B6 toxicity from food alone. If you're just eating normal food, not sports drinks that are spiked with it, that those could cause a problem. But, you know, you're not going to get B6 toxicity from food. Yeah, and I think the consequences of not having enough B6 are just as bad, if not worse, than having a so-called elevated level of it.
So a normal one-a-day vitamin should have an ample supply of B6 in it. You wouldn't have to supplement beyond that.
Yeah, you only need a couple milligrams, and it's preferable if you take the activated form of B6, which is called P5P, as opposed to the routine one that they often put into multivitamins, which is just pyridoxine phosphate, I think, yeah, or hydrochloride. Those have to be converted by the liver into the active form, and if there's a block in your metabolism in the conversion process, then you can get a buildup of B6, but we've never really encountered this many people having this type of problem with B6.
Right. We're almost out of time here. Is there a possibility that this is something else?
Oh, I would think so. I wouldn't stop it at assuming that elevated B6 is the root cause of the problem. I think it's more a symptom of a bigger problem.
I would agree. Anyway, it's just another chapter in the endless chapters of vax injury syndrome and symptoms. In this case, people are looking at B6 as the culprit. I wonder about that. I wonder.
Yeah, I do too. And as I said, if you become deficient in B6, you have a long list of problems that go with that, which also include neurological issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also problems with your sulfur cycle, which involves
Krebs.
Detoxification, neurotransmitters, producing the mucin that lines the gut. It wouldn't be uncommon to have joint problems. because B6 is involved in the synthesis of the proteoglycans that comprise the joints. So,
well, we don't want to run anybody off into the weeds with this as a new topic, because it may be being misread. It may not be B6.
Yeah, I think so too.
So if the point of this little information session is that if you hear people talking about B6 toxicity, don't be too quick to jump to that conclusion. Step back.
No, because I'm not sure they've got people on very restrictive diets to try to cause their body to rid itself of the excess B6. And I've seen now several accounts of people being on this diet for 2 years, and it's not really solving their issues.
Mm-hmm. There are so many problems from these shots. It's almost limitless. It tips over the whole structure of life in the body by attacking the blood first, and you know where it goes from there. And now we're getting people who go in with a backache, and they get a workup at the ER, and then they're told, well, we've found cancer. Where? Several places. And it's turbo cancer, and these people are dying in a matter of hours, days, or weeks afterward. And they had no knowledge, not even a hunch, that they had cancer. All injected, all shot up. What we're watching for is to see the uninjected, if they're going to show up with turbo cancers, even more proof of shedding. We don't need
any more. Well, we have. We've had a couple stories.
There have been a couple.
Of unvaxxed people. I remember there was one who was a caregiver. Not really a caregiver, but who was tending to a neighbor in a wheelchair that needed rides to and from her doctor's appointments, and she came down with an aggressive cancer.
Not good. Not good.
No.
Okay. There's our information meal for you, so digest it slowly. I'll listen again if you'd like, and it's a tough times. Just be careful. Do the best you can, and don't buy into the mask paranoia. Masks work if they're worn properly, and you are trying to maintain a relative freedom from being spiked by shedding. Masks are very important, and short-term use. And keep them clean, of course. Common sense.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. Good job.
Okay. My pleasure, Jeff. Okay. Good night, everyone.
All right. We'll be right back with more. Dick Allgaier up next, talking about that big event that the remote viewers are saying is coming by the end of the year. That's next.